Marcus Hanneman, goalkeeper slash cool goatee guy. Played for Reading, Wolves, Fulham, amongst others. 299 appearances in between the sticks for Reading, 9 caps for the USA, winner of the championship with Reading, 2 league titles with Seattle Sounders and the Gold Cup with the States. Has seen the band Tool live more than any other human being and, of course, author. But let's see what the book club thought in today's The Football Book Club.
It seems like Ibrahim Sonka's attitude is basically just, I will take my top off for money.
It really is so loosely a book.
That bit was a little bit like, have you read Gone Girl?
Now back to play Xbox in my hot tub.
Baby! Stern John. Yay!
Yay!
Woohoo! Another episode, still in lockdown.
Still sound like we're underwater. Yeah!
Hello and welcome to the Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read yet another obscure footballer's autobiography. Less Tolstoy, more Ed DeHoy. I'm James Bug, and we'll be using this time behind closed doors to read classics such as Rohan Ricketts' Passion for Football and Alexi Lalas's Kicking Balls. But today, we're going to be reading Marcus Hanneman's Premiership Diary. And reading it with me, I'm joined remotely by our book group of comedy writers, Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
And Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
How are we all doing?
Not quite lost my mind yet, but almost there, you know?
That's nearly. Good. Nearly losing my mind.
And how responsible was the book for that?
The book actually brought me back to life, I reckon.
Oh, that's good.
I
agree with that.
It put me back in touch with the real world.
The real world of 2006, when people could go out.
Exactly.
Yeah, when this book was written. 2006 Reading was something that really meant a lot to you, Tash,
yes,
didn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was.
It's something slightly different, this book this week. A Premiership Diary. Not really an autobiography like we normally do. But,
no.
You know, there's a lot of his life and his story in there. But anyone got any memories of big Marcus Hanneman?
Again, literally no. Literally, I have no memory of Marcus Hanneman.
Do you remember who he is?
So it was that thing of, I remember him playing for Wolves.
I'm pretty sure he played in a crazy Spurs game when I think it was like 6-4 Tottenham Reading 1 year around Chris. I think it was the season after this book was written.
If you'd have just shown me a picture of him, I would have thought he was maybe like a B member of Limp Bizkit or something.
the Limp Bizkit reserve team.
Him being a goalkeeper would have been very far down the list.
Oh, God.
Occupation.
I love the idea that you could go see Limp Bizkit and they'd be like, oh, they put out the reserves tonight. Oh, come on.
Oh, it's Limp Bizkit under 21.
Yeah, he's coming back to full fitness, so he's...
I do remember Hanneman very clearly for Reading, but I also... kind of all goalkeepers, American goalkeepers' ability kind of are all a bit homogenous for me. Because have I told you my theory before? It's not even so much a theory, but it's an observation that all US goalkeepers are bald.
Yep.
And I find that very unusual. There's been 5 goalkeepers in the Premier League. Tim Howard.
Yep.
Brad Guzan.
Yep.
Brad Friedel.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Casey Keller.
Yep.
Marcus Hanneman.
Yeah. All
American. All bald.
All bald. Although
Old Eagles.
Oh, that's very good. None of them played for Crystal Palace. So he talks about how in this book, like why there are so many good American goalkeepers. And it's something I'd never thought about before. But he's like, oh, yeah, in America, everyone plays basketball and American football. So you need really good hand-eye coordination. So obviously, and he then says, like, you know, in most countries, the worst player will go in goal. But in America, it's like, oh, people actually want to be a goalkeeper.
That's true. He says something like, maybe if you all played cricket in England, then you'd be better at goalkeeping.
Just
maybe.
Or
you'd be good at cricket.
Yeah. It'd be really funny if everyone who was in the England cricket team was like secretly going, at some point, I really want to play in goal for England.
Let's head over to our best friends at Amazon to see what the reviews are saying. And guys, you're not going to believe it. The book has 0 reviews on Amazon. We found one. We did it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I'm going to give it one.
It hasn't even got a review by Baselboy.
Terrible.
Friend of the show. I want to meet Baselboy. I wonder if Baselboy can come on and review a book by a Swiss player. Possibly. Shakiri's book or something.
Or Shakira's book. Anyway.
Oh, that'd be even better. However, there is an official review on the page, kind of within the description, from something I've never heard of called Winger Magazine.
Winger Magazine?
Maybe run by like David Gindler or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But they exclusively review goalkeepers' books.
Yeah, figure that one out. Hanneman is one of the more articulate footballers, so these nicely illustrated 228 pages provide an interesting and different insight to the game. We learn a lot about the American's thoughts and his fellow pros. Rob Green is considered to be capable. The diarist also reviews... The diarist also reveals that teammate Ulysses de la Cruz is nicknamed El Presidente and that he sends some of his wages home to his home village in Ecuador. What a weird review.
That's such a tiny bit of the book.
That's the two of the least important things
to take from the whole book.
I mean, I would argue that the capable line is one of the greatest disses ever.
That's true. Maybe Winger Magazine is a big magazine in Ecuador.
Yeah. And maybe Ecuador are obsessed with Rob Green and what people think of Rob Green.
Yeah. Rob Green and Ulysses de la Cruz. We're going to go into more depth about the book as we go. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, probably slagging off America. But first, let's go around the group. No, we're getting very nice at America, I'm sure. Let's go around the group in a sentence or two. What did you think of the book, Tash?
Well, Adrian Mole's diary is one of my favourite books, and I was hoping that this was going to be a little bit like Marcus Hanneman, age 35 and three quarters, Premiership diary. However, I did enjoy the format, and I thought it was a very highly produced, you know, piece of work. But, oh my God, Marcus Hanneman and I think the feeling would be mutual, would definitely not be friends.
Really? You don't click?
No, he is... I've actually written in my notes, he might be my nightmare man.
What is a nightmare man?
That's not, I'm not saying...
You know, a nightmare man.
Yeah, my nightmare man.
Is that like a person you don't want to meet in life or someone who haunts your dreams?
It's like the one that you dread, like swiping right on Tinder or left on Tinder. Which way is it? You accidentally
end up on a date with him.
Oh,
if
God.
I swipe right on Marcus Hanneman, I'll be so happy.
No.
Anyway, Marcus Hanneman. You don't want to go on Marcus Hanneman.
Basically, I don't want to go on a date with Marcus Hanneman, but I did, of all of the books that I've read in this genre, it was one of the more enjoyable ones.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, it really is so loosely a book. It doesn't even really make sense as a diary, and there's no story throughout.
It's a series of blogs.
It is. And I love Marcus, the heavy metal listening, hunting US
food
goalkeeper.
Blogger.
And it is a good insight into his mind, so I enjoy that.
I found it incredibly calming. As a book, it just calmed me down a lot. Whenever I was sort of feeling a little bit like anxious or nervous, I would just read one of his mundane thoughts and be like, okay.
Do you think that's maybe because there wasn't really any, it was just a very good season for Reading. There weren't really many downs. It was mainly just ups and ups and ups and ups.
He still managed to find quite a few things to be miserable about.
Yeah, he's a bit of a grump.
True. And
I guess it probably would have been a bit harder if it had been a worse season, but he's still, he isn't like, oh my God, this is the pinnacle of my life. He doesn't seem to have that many emotions. He's like, oh, it's going well. Cool. Who would have thought that? We're doing quite well. This is nice. Yay. Now back to play Xbox in my hot tub.
I don't think he played it in his hot tub.
But he would do one then the other.
He does love his hot tub and his Xbox.
He would definitely at one point shout, Amanda, can you bring the Xbox out? I want to play in my hot tub.
Amanda is his wife, who we should mention.
Now back to play Xbox in my hot tub.
She also writes quite a lot. Yeah, she is lovely. Yeah. She also writes quite a lot in the book because she's talking throughout the book about the Reading Royals.
The royal family. I felt like that bit was a little bit like, have you read Gone Girl?
What are you suggesting?
But you know how you have her entry and then his entry and they kind of contradict each other? That happened quite a lot. And I was like, who's telling the truth here?
A bit like
The Affair.
The other famous Gone Girl, Jermaine Pennant and Sky Andrews relationship. Jermaine Pennant's mental.
There wasn't as much of that in this, to be fair. There wasn't as much of like out and out lying from Marcus Hanneman and Amanda being like, that's not what my husband did. You have to believe me. Like, usually it would be stuff like, we met this couple in Wimbledon, and she'd go, it was actually Clapham. And you'd be like, oh, okay, cool.
So she writes quite a bit of it. Otherwise, the rest of it is 2006, Reading's first season in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And most days he has a little diary entry in there. And then a bunch of pictures inside it. Shall I read the description inside? Marcus Allen's Premiership diary begins with Reading's glorious promotion from the Championship after lifting the title with a record number of points. Marcus then watches the USA's 2006 World Cup campaign from the bench. and also talks about the how Reading are off in their incredible first season. But a top Premiership footballer has to relax, in Marcus's case, by listening to heavy metal music and hobnobbing. Great use of hobnobbing. With his celebrity rock mates. No, not members of Atomic Kitten or Girls Aloud, but the band Tool. What? He also loves hunting and fishing.
Why would you think it was going to be Atomic Kitten and Girls Aloud? Like, as if we'd be like, oh yeah, Marcus Hammond, he'll hang out with Atomic Kitten and Girls Aloud.
But I'm pretty sure that in 2006, though, Atomic Kitten were not a thing.
No, they weren't.
I think that was them covering their bases. They were like, oh, right, okay. you know, like an old girl band like Atomic Kitten, or a new girl band like Girls Aloud.
Ah.
Yeah.
Not bands like Atomic Kitten or the Supremes. He also loves hunting and fishing and spends his spare time souping up sports cars, racing them around dirt tracks, and then pops down to the Majewski Stadium to face Thierry Henry, which is like not organized match. And then Marcus's wife Amanda also reveals how being a wag in Reading does not mean the same as being Mrs. Beckham or Mrs. Rooney. Pretty cool. That basically is the book.
Yeah, that's pretty much the book.
Could have just read that, to be honest.
In the acknowledgements, I loved the fact that it's the only book where the person who wrote it has had to thank Casey Keller and the whole of Tool. which I thought was fantastic. He does love Tool. We'll get to that later, but yeah, God. Oh,
wow. He loves Tool. He will not stop talking about Tool.
Even Graham Murty, remember him? Reading captain at the time, fullback.
Yeah.
He wrote a really good foreword.
I love this foreword by Graham Murty. It's really funny.
It is really funny. He basically just slags off Marcus the whole way through.
Yeah.
But he writes one of my favourite ever sentences. About Marcus loving Tool. He says, he's tried countless times to get all the squad to go to one of their concerts. But can you imagine Leroy Leiter and Ibrahim Asonko at Tool gig? I can't. No matter how much I try, I can't imagine it. So the way the book starts, it begins with them getting promoted early on. April the 1st, 2006, they get promoted. It took me a while to get into the book, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Because I didn't understand what was going on for about 15 pages. It starts off April 1st, we are the champions. Today we beat Derby 5-0. And then I assumed that, okay, every day there'll be a new thing. But he just seems to carry on his thoughts across the days.
Yeah.
Like April 2nd, yeah. I was promoted once before to the Premiership. As though he's been thinking for 24 hours about promotion.
And like Amanda's been going like, what are you doing at the moment? It's like, no, do not let me lose my train of thought.
Don't test me. Then April 3rd carries on. I think we might have missed a trick at that match, actually. We should have given out shirts when we went up.
That's my favourite bit of this first bit, where I knew this book was going to be something special. They've just been promoted, and here's the thing he's thinking about 2 days later is, we should have got some merchandising. We should have got some shirts available. And also, complaining that they ran out of champagne.
That is really strange.
This book is an absolute ode to capitalism, isn't it?
He has
drank the Kool-Aid of every brand, way to make money. Oh my God.
Do you think this was self-published by just getting loads of money from big brands and stuff?
Yeah.
But then after he talks about missing the trick with the shirts, and the next day he goes back to Christmas on April 4th. He goes,
yeah. Time is extremely fluid in this book, I will agree.
It really is. There's one later on where he just starts off a day by going, what's the fastest I've ever driven?
Then he would wake up and immediately shout that. They are definitely just random thoughts that have been put into the structure of a diary.
So once I got used to that, I was on board, but it took me a little while to kind of go, that's not a diary.
Yeah.
How it works. He'll say things like, a lot of work has gone into this wonderful conclusion, getting promoted. Now it's time to enjoy. April 2nd. He doesn't go into the party that they're having. He never mentions it.
He does not like a party. That man does not enjoy a party.
He really doesn't like parties. Even then, things that he does like a Tool gig, page 16, he includes a story on June 6th about being offered tickets to go see Tool, and then doesn't mention the gig at all.
Yeah,
about what the gig was like.
He just gives the conversation, which is someone saying, "Hey, this is when they're in the World Cup." It's a manager saying, "Like, hey, do you want to go see a rock band?" And he goes, "What kind of rock band is it?" And she goes, "Well, it's not a great rock band. they had the Eagles last week, but this time it's some band called Tool." And he's immediately like, "Yeah, I love Tool, because apparently they're connected at the hip. I think, like, cosmically, Tool and Marcus Hanneman just seem to bump into each other."
I'm
constantly.
Sorry, there is no way that Marcus Hanneman did not know that Tool were in his vicinity. He has got their tour diary down.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You're completely right.
Prison Break, where he has a map on his stomach. He's got the same, but all the dates they're playing the European sport.
And his head like glows every time Tool are within a mile. Tool are playing. We must get to the Toolmobile.
He loves Tool. Metal.
He loves Tool, so much that he chased Graham Murty out of his sharing a room with him. Such a weird.
Graham Murty didn't want to listen to Tool. He's like, out of the room.
Graham Murty was like, "Could you please not listen to Tool all the time?" He was like, "I think I have to listen to Tool all the time. You just need to get another room."
My favorite bit of his Tool sort of memoirs was when he casually drops in that, like, at the beginning, he might get some tickets to go and see them, but by the end, Tool are going to Cardiff to watch the Carling Cup final with him. And there's no like development of that relationship. It just seems to happen.
Do you think there's a Tool diary of 2006-2007 that is just about Marcus Hanneman?
Oh, please. Maybe that's the true Gone
Girl
story.
Just about Reading.
Yeah.
We loved Ibrahim Asunko, but it never come to our gigs. There's something really funny, which for some reason has been a theme now, I've noticed, in the books. When they have the open top celebration going around Reading, he does the same thing that I think Gary Monk did, where his biggest worry is that no one's going to turn up to the open top ceremony.
I love that. I love it
why
so much.
It's really sweet, but why are footballers so worried about that?
This gave me a bit of insight, because Gary Monk didn't go into it. Marcus Hanneman does. Marcus Hanneman says, "We got to the bus depot when there were three people there." And that would make me very nervous.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that he starts at the bus depot really makes me smile.
Yeah, that is a funny idea. Yeah.
I've got to mention the bus depot.
Tickets, everyone, tickets. Then the rest of the chapter the beginning of the book, he's off as third choice goalkeeper for the United States.
Yeah, so, doesn't get a game.
Yeah.
Doesn't get a game. No. He basically just spends the World Cup eating. Seems like most of he talks less about the matches, more about the brilliant spread he has all the time, all the food that he can eat, because they bring a load of like American foods, which you can't buy in Reading or something.
Peanut butter and jelly, which apparently you can't get in Reading.
yeah.
Isn't jelly just jam?
It is. Yeah. Yeah,
it is, right? Yeah.
We could blow Marcus Hanneman's mind.
The US national team have quite cool names, though. Like the
So cool.
Bruce Arena.
Oh, Bruce Arena.
Yeah, he was the manager at the time. And he's been a manager a couple of times. Talking of great American names, he mentions the teammates we played for at Seattle Sounders.
Oh, yeah.
There was Dickie McCormick, Gary Heal, Chance Fry, Peter Hattrap, and Gary Megson's brother, Neil.
Gary Megson's brother.
Gary Megson's brother. Love Neil.
Even Neil Megson can't escape from the shadow of his brother Gary.
Gary Megson. Well, when you've got such a a VIP brother, like what
like Gary Megson.
But yeah, just eats his way through the World Cup.
The food stuff is great, because that genuinely has a development where he's like, "This is great. I have chocolate cakes, six different types of ice cream, and just all the best food I've ever eaten. I celebrate with he celebrates his birthday with a typically delicious German cake filled with cream." And then after about two or three entries, it ends with, "Now the food spreads we have at the hotel are a joke. I have a food mountain." He seems actively annoyed at how much food they have.
And then two pages later, "People keep calling me fat and I don't know why."
There's a lot of reading between the lines you have to do in this book.
Yeah. Imagine if this book was just his food diary the whole way through. I would love to read that.
I would love to read the food
he's eating the whole time. Just never mentions Reading. All the fans are flicking through. It's just cake. It's cake all the time.
Just delicious German cake with cream.
So apart from eating, he then goes back to
Seattle.
He goes back to America And he brings in his wife then. His wife's I mean, this is a book, a rarity in the ones we've done so far, where his wife talks loads in the book. And he mentions his wife loads. And his family life is so important to him, which is really nice.
It's really nice, actually. I really liked his family life. Like, it sounds very sort of mild, but really sweet. There's a bit where he mentions that Amanda bakes brownies for the,
team.
Every away game. That's so sweet. And she seems absolutely lovely. I just loved reading about his life in that aspect. It was so sweet.
He's got two sweet kids.
His two sweet kids, and there was a bit where he talks about how one time he was sad because he'd lost a match, and his kid asked him what was wrong, and he said, "Well, I've lost a match," and he said, "Don't worry, we'll find it tomorrow."
That was very sweet.
Yeah. Oh God,
it's actually a great book to read when all the chaos is going on outside, because you read it and you're like, "Oh,
it is." I know what you mean by calming. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
It's just a diary of a guy who even admits himself that he's living a charmed life and he's painted life. He's just got the nicest life you could have.
And you're like, I'll read about that for a bit, sure.
But when his wife sets up, I thought they were setting his wife up to run away with the sea at some point. Because the first time you meet his wife, they go back to Seattle, and the first thing she said is, "My dad, John Day, and mum, Loannis, owned Seabeck Shellfish Farm, about an hour from the city, and I spent an idyllic childhood on, in, or near the sea. I sold oysters and clams and didn't realize how much the sea was part of me until I moved away from it. Dad was also a marine biologist." Everything is about the sea.
Yeah.
I assumed at some point that she will leave Marcus and then go back.
Like, there's also
opposite of Little Mermaid style.
There's a really sad bit where she's like, "Oh, I lived in Guam. I love snorkeling and traveling. And when I traveled next, I went to Reddit." I was like, "Oh, babe, hon, I'm sorry." Yeah.
Like, good lord.
She really does miss the sea.
I can imagine one day Marcus coming home and there being a note saying, "I'm sorry, I've gone off to be with the sea again."
And he looks out the window and like there's like a flipper coming out. Yeah. That's the end.
I really like the bit in Seattle where he talks about the closeness to the mountains means it's perfectly possible to ski and water ski on the same day. I haven't done it, but I know people who have. Like it's this mythical thing.
My favorite. If that's your favorite thing about somewhere, you should have done it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's like, my favorite thing is the Eiffel Tower. Never seen it, but I'd like to.
I know people who have.
Yeah, and they say it's great, so that's cool. Talking about falling in love, there was a moment where I thought he might fall in love with. He has like a kind of Casablanca style meeting with Harry Redknapp. He's meant to. He has a trial at West Ham, and he wants him to stay longer. But I told him I had a plane to catch the next day, and he didn't try to stop me, so I left.
Do you think he was waiting for Harry Redknapp to run through the airport like a rom-com?
And he just sighs and then hands his ticket over. And
Marcus, wait! sir, get back here! Yeah.
We need a backup to Ludek McGlasgow. I thought you'd never say those words.
You had me at Ludek.
But in terms of the other people most important in his life, the people who are most important to him, the guy who works at Costco.
Loves the guy at Costco.
And a Porsche dealer.
Ray Northway.
And his barista.
Northway Porsche. And he loves Starbucks. Oh my God, he loves Starbucks.
Did you know that Starbucks is a Seattle company? Because if you didn't, he tells you about 17 times.
He's really proud of Seattle. He also talks about how like Pearl Jam and Nirvana come from there. And you're like, yeah, okay,
that's cool. Doesn't mention Frasier once.
Yeah, that was the worst bit for me. I was expecting at least a couple of Frasier like days where Amanda and him sit and like binge a couple of seasons of Frasier.
Or watch Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah, he didn't mention Sleepless in Seattle either.
I know.
God, this guy's never even been to Seattle in his life. But in terms of brands, he mentions Porsche loads, Starbucks, Costco, Red Bull a lot. Kyocera, is that how you pronounce
Kyocera,
it? The Reading sponsors.
Reading sponsors. Yeah,
he does drink far too much Red Bull. Let's clarify that. He drinks it on the pitch, which I find insane.
I didn't realize you could do that.
No, me neither. I thought he's gonna. I mean, luckily he's retired now, but that's heart attack material.
Yeah,
like drinking
surely.
Loads of Red Bull. And then playing elite football.
The amount of times in this book that he says, "I looked around at the magnificent stadium, shook my head, and had a sip of Red Bull." Like, it's just such an odd, like, it's such an odd thing to be like, "Oh, wow, I'm finally here at peace. Have some Red Bull. Okay, here we go." It's, I feel, not like I want my goalkeepers to be calm as well.
Yeah.
Don't you want your goalkeepers to be calm and not?
Yeah.
Not like
frantic.
Not given wings.
Yeah. Not not hepped up in the middle of an essay crisis.
He must have been buzzed for coronavirus. I bet his cupboards were so well stocked.
That's true. I wonder where he's living now, actually. I wonder if he's in America or not.
He is in America. He is a soccer coach for Newport High School in Washington.
Oh, that's nice.
That's good.
How did you find that out? What do you know that we don't?
I did a little interneting, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I need to get on this internet. I need to start using this. Guys, anyone got a no-context Marcus Hanneman this week?
I don't stay behind after games, not even to have a beer with friends. Today is no different. I go home and order fish and chips, Chinese and Indian takeaways, and pour myself a drop of America, Jim Beam.
He has three takeaways in one.
But crucially, he says he gets them all from the same place.
Which is gonna be grim.
Yeah.
He sort of says like, you know, it's great, it's so convenient, it's only 100 yards from my house. Raise your standards, Marcus. Yeah,
I wonder if he's discovered Deliveroo now and he's broadened his horizons a bit.
Yeah, he can now order four takeaways. Jack, did you have one?
It's technically two, but I think you'll understand why.
Okay.
March 4th. Dear Diary, I met Jens Lehmann after the game today. The purpose was to get his shirt for my collection, but I have to be wary because Amanda is looking for items for a race night and auction tomorrow night, and I wouldn't want that to get in there. March 5th. Dear Diary, the shirt's gone missing. Yes, it's an auction item, and yes, I have to buy it back. Don't ask me how much I pay.
I love Amanda.
I love Amanda so much. And
yeah.
I love how she like flits in between his world in a really like satisfying way. Like even when she's not like the focus, she seems to be like pulling the strings. Oh, she's fantastic.
There's a really strange moment though where she's talking about how they're looking for a new house in Reading.
Yeah.
She says, the thing that clinched it for us was that neither of us could get a mobile reception. The same thing happened in our previous two homes, so we figured we had to buy. Why? They bought three houses where you can't use your mobile phone.
I mean, seems like a really like, bad thing. Is it to be like, oh, well, you know, we can't get mobile reception, so we have to talk to each other. So
I guess so.
Yeah, it's to be a bit off-grid.
But also, what do they do when they do get mobile reception? Like, if they put up a mast near them, are they like, okay, we have to move again.
Gotta move now.
Yeah. Gotta move to a dead spot somewhere. It's so odd. Amanda also, I mean, just before that, talks about how she was doing the Green Park Challenge.
Oh my gosh.
At Majewski Stadium. And it's going really well. And she talks about, like, she entered and took part in both of these marathons. At the time,
this is back in 2002.
At the time, we were well settled in Wimbledon, as opposed to many Americans who headed home after 9/11, their departure making those of us who remained a little uneasy. I remember 9/11 vividly. And then it goes into 9/11 for a bit.
It's such an awkward transition into it. Like, she's just talking about running in a park.
Yeah. And then just
9/11.
Yeah, international terrorism, how America is perceived. I love my friends and family. Oh God, I was so scared I was going to die. Did quite well in the marathon. Bye! I really like the way that he says he got an American tattoo on his shoulder. Apparently because people were making fun of him at Fulham.
Oh yeah, I know.
It's such an odd bit where he's like,
such
Paul Pascal Salido.
Thing to do.
Oh yeah,
a Canadian. Made fun of me at Fulham for being American. So I decided to teach him a lesson by getting an American tattoo on my shoulder.
Yeah. Oh God.
Well, that's Paul Pascal Salido learned.
Yeah. Imagine coming back and telling that to Amanda. She's like, "Why have you got a tattoo on your shoulder?" He goes, "Well, Paul Pascal Salido was making fun of me." So naturally.
But they have a really great start to season. And to be honest, the whole season goes really well.
The whole season goes. Yeah. I'd forgotten how good Reading were.
Yeah, they did have a really good. I think they went down the next year, from memory.
Yeah, they really struggled afterwards, yeah.
But, yeah, they did a bit of an Ipswich where they almost. But the Ipswich did get into Europe. They almost got into Europe. For context, it was the season where Petr Cech had his injury with Stephen Hunt, who was obviously at Reading at the time, which he talks about a bit in there. They were 1 point off Europe at the end of the season, which he doesn't seem to care about.
Yeah, but he seems.
He's like, oh well. They were like, I looked at. They were literally like one goal away from getting into Europe.
And he gets injured in the last game. And yes. if they'd scored, and if he'd stayed on the pitch, they may have got into Europe. But he doesn't talk
about care
that.
About. But that would have been incredible.
It would have been. He at one point says, "We might get into Europe. I've only been to Germany, Spain, and Portugal, so it'd be nice to see other bits of Europe."
Oh,
he could go to other bits of Europe anyway.
Yes.
He doesn't need to rely on a football player or a football team for that.
Fingers crossed we get in.
Yeah. He seems remarkably unbothered by the whole thing. Like,
yes,
he has a crazily good season. He's like, according to the Actim season thing or whatever it's called, he's
Actim,
like,
Sports Index or something.
Actim Sports Index, which I'd never heard of.
That's weird.
He's the second best goalkeeper. He's the second best goalkeeper in the whole country.
Second to David James, right? I think.
Yeah, he seems really like chill about it though. Like, he doesn't.
Well, I guess as a Reading keeper, you have to save a lot of shots. You're going to be testing more, aren't you?
Yeah, except, I mean, they do have
loads of... He'd be a great fancy football goalkeeper. He'd have been a great fancy football goalkeeper.
They have loads of clean sheets as well. Like,
they do? Yeah.
He's definitely, like, they're definitely good
or
value for doing well.
As he calls
them. Shutouts. He loves talking about shutouts. I shut out. I had a shutout.
There's also a moment where he describes Nicky Shorey as the cross leader in their team, which is like, all right, that's too American for me. I'm out.
That sounds a bit like something that would, like, a thing you'd have at Easter. Like, he ate the Easter parade. He was the cross leader.
But there's also like players like Shane Long in the team.
Yeah, Shane
not
Long.
Really that. Dave Kitson,
Kevin Doyle.
I love it when you call me Leroy Lita.
Oh my god! Every time I read his name, I was singing that bloody song.
It's a crossover hit. Guys, who wants Ken's song this week?
Oh,
yes, please.
As we all know, Ken, every week, he writes a new chant about obscure football players from the noughties. And this time he's done a song to the tune of Thong Song by Sisqó.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
I mean, that's got everyone excited already.
Fully on board.
Here we go. He got shots, Mickey Duck. Duck, duck. Goals like what? All night long. Let us see Stern John. Baby. Stern John.
Oh my god.
That's fantastic.
He keeps getting better and better, Kem.
Yeah, that's one of the best ones.
God.
Wonderful. Oh, Stern John.
Since he turned 30, he's really upped his game.
He really has.
He's become much more mature in his writing.
Sure.
But let's bring back They Don't Make Him Like That Anymore, talking to the people who are at the squad. Steve Coppell, probably got to talk about.
Love Steve Coppell.
I do too.
He's like such a nice man from this book.
Yeah.
He does, but also he's kind of a bit strange at times. Like, he speaks weirdly in, as opposed to getting annoyed at players in team talks at the end of matches, he says things like, I'm disassociating myself from you guys today. Which is like a robot.
I am going offline.
There's also a moment where February 12th, Jack, I know you liked this. Steve Coppell has a dry wit. So it's rare to see him laugh out loud, but he did once, just once. Stephen Hunt went to cross with his left foot in training, but hit the ball into touch with his trailing plant leg, his right. Sure, it was funny. He couldn't have done it again if he'd tried, but none of us are ready for the gaffer's reaction. He'd laugh like a drain and surprise us all.
I love the idea that he was laughing for 5 minutes solid. And they're all just standing at him like, Steve, what's wrong? He's just like a psychopath, laughing and laughing.
The only thing I can put that close to is when this Peter Reed just stared at the floor in one of the books we had so far.
In Jason McAtee,
odd manager behaviour. I can't. Those two kind of sit up with me for them. There's something else going on behind the scenes there.
Something that Steve Coppell is not telling us there. He has a really good attitude, Steve Coppell. There's a bit which I really liked that seemed to stick with me, where he says, "It's amazing what you guys can accomplish if none of you cares who gets the credit." Which is sort of sums up this whole Reading team, because I'd forgotten how good this Reading team was, and the players, you know, like, they're good players, but they're not like, they didn't go on to set the world on fire, but they did, you know, they achieved something incredible as a group.
It does sound a bit like something you'd read on the wall in Facebook or something.
I know what you mean. Coach Carter, definitely
in a cult. Yeah,
I remember talking to Coach Carter. That's Pascal Chimbonda's favourite film.
Really?
I remember watching Footballer's Cribs, and he said he was talking about all his DVDs, and he said my favourite is Coach Carter. As a French accent.
Respect.
Hope you enjoyed.
Yeah.
Coach Carter.
Coach Carter.
Also, why does Ibrahim Asonko take his shirt off all the time?
I was going to wonder this.
It happens so often in the book.
And Amanda keeps on being like, so Amanda sets up these charity events for the Reading players.
Called the Royals Families.
The Royals right? Families. Yeah. It's really sweet. It's a really good thing. And it's like, it brings in like Reading players to like sell, you know, like special training sessions, you know, for charity.
Yeah.
It seems like Ibrahim Sonka's attitude is basically just, I will take my top off for money. and you'll get to dance with me. And I'm not entirely sure who instigated that, whether it was Amanda being like, can you take your top off? Or was it Sonka being like, I must take my top off.
Yeah. All the other guys are like saying like, well, he likes fishing, so maybe you can go fishing with Dave Kitson, or like Marcus, you like Tool, maybe you can listen to Tool. Ibrahimo, shirt off? Yeah.
Shirt's already off. Cool, okay, good.
Yeah. He does it for a fashion show and a charity auction. And also, I think the Valentine's Ball.
I think it's the Valentine's Ball.
I was wondering, which event would you rather go to? The Valentine's Ball or the Red and White Ball from Sunderland?
Oh, the 100% the Red and White one.
I mean, is there a bucking bronco here?
Yeah, and Marty McCutcheon on a
and I'm sorry,
bungee run.
But the only thing that he talks about, this bloody ball, is how much he hates wearing a suit.
Oh my god, which
he
is so crazy.
He's so much.
It's so funny.
He's like seven. He's like a seven-year-old.
He literally ends that entry saying like, today's the Valentine's Ball and I'm pissed off because it means I have to put on a suit. Then he talks about wearing a suit and then he just goes, sucks.
And then Amanda gives her bit of it.
Yeah.
And she says, well, once he'd got over his suit problem, which from what I can tell is just wearing a suit.
Yeah.
He's got a suit. It's so odd. I mean, he plays Xbox. He eats nothing but tuna sandwiches in his hot tub, and he hates putting.
Oh yeah, he eats tuna sandwiches.
He's like a 13-year-old boy. It's crazy.
Yeah, he gets in a hot tub before a game to relax.
Then drinks loads of Red Bull.
Plays on his Xbox. Yeah, he's a canned tuna sandwich. Yeah,
imagine like Amanda being like, Marcus, could you put your suit on? You got to go to the PFA Awards. He's like, oh, shut up, Amanda!
You're so cool, Amanda. Leave me alone.
I want to play on my Xbox.
Amanda. But
the ball, just to give you an insight into what happens, the Valentine's ball. It's a 3-course sit-down meal and auction. Glenn Little was the auctioneer, and very good he was too. There's 300 guests, including Marcus in a suit. One of the auction prizes was the first dance of the evening with a shirtless Ibrahim Sonko.
Of course.
The girls were queuing up. So someone paid 700 quid for it. 700 quid for dance with topless Ibrahim Sonko.
I mean, it's probably the only thing keeping the Reading charity going, is topless Ibrahim Sonko.
Yeah. We raised £21,000 alone from Ibrahim Sonko's house. Guys, can I do this week's dramatic reading?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, please.
It's a shorter one this week. Can someone cue the dramatic music?
Go on, Jack.
Cue.
don't delegate.
Like, go on, you do it. You do it. I'm tired. Cue. Dramatic music.
Thank you very much, Jack.
Good
this
one.
Story is called Marcus Hanneman Tries to Drink a Red Bull Discreetly. We mentioned how much he likes Red Bull. Here we go. April 1st, 2007. This is going to sound like an April Fool's joke, but I've run into trouble for drinking Red Bull. Doesn't sound like an April Fool's joke.
It sounds like the most believable thing in this whole book.
Just as I'm preparing for the game at Tottenham, I'm told that Lucozade, the Premier League's official sports drink partner, have spotted me swigging Red Bull, one of their rivals, I guess, in my goal during games, and they're not happy. I don't know where the I guess comes from. One of their rivals, I guess. Red Bull is part of my pre-match ritual, which I've explained is so important to me, and I've been drinking the sugar-free variety for 3 years. I love the way that he was drinking the all-sugar version as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Years and years ago. Yeah. Up until 3 years ago.
Yeah. Which coincided with Reading doing really well, so, you know.
It's kind of like, there's going to be some point in the future where they say, like, Marcus, for your insides, you need to start drinking Red Bull. He's like, no, I can't drink Red Bull.
Please, the one thing that can cure you is Lucozade. Please drink some Lucozade.
No, I must keep drinking the Red Bull. It's part of me. It's important to me, and I'm baffled as to what to do. I want to carry on drinking Red Bull, but I don't want to upset Lucozade. Put big money into our game. You know, one thing, Marcus, you want to know, you don't want to get Lucozade in your back.
Oh, no, definitely not.
No.
The Lucozade people, you wake up with half a Lucozade bottle in your bed.
Yeah. Where does Lucozade Sport come from? So he comes up with a little crafty solution. For the Spurs game, I pour Red Bull into a Lucozade bottle and put that into the back of my net. But it tastes vile from the plastic bottle. I won't do that again. For the rest of the season, my plan is to put white tape around the Red Bull logo. We'll see if that works. And we never find out.
We never find out. It's so annoying.
I did have a sneaky look to see if I could find any pictures, and there are none. So I don't think it worked.
Lucozade, that's big Lucozade.
They clamped down on that.
Yeah.
Big Lucozade.
Guys, don't say anything bad, because Lucozade will take this podcast down.
It would be great if the final entry of this book was just, so I'm going to prison for drinking... for breaking the Premier League's rules on Red Bull.
On Red Bull and drinking it at White Hart Lane. And that was this week's dramatic reading. Jack, I asked you to do a thing called Peter Reid Watch this week. So It's time for Peter Reid Watch.
Peter Reid Watch.
Peter Reid Watch. Any Peter Reid obviously pops up loads in our books. We have mentioned him today, but does he pop up in this book, Jack?
Nope.
Peter Reid Watch. Okay. God, that's a shame.
There is a lot of Alan Pardew, though. So
that is true. So yes. Other people who've kind of been in the show a lot, Pardew is in there a lot. Oh, sorry, there's like a fire. Is that Lucozade coming
that's
to get
Lucozade.
You?
That's big Lucozade.
I can hear the sirens. At least you're not being attacked by crows.
That's true. Yeah. There are two options, being attacked by crows or Lucozade.
But yeah, Pardew does go up a lot, and he's very...
He's described as like the anti-Copple. Quite a lot, which is
he seems more aggressive than he has in other books, but he does kind of laud him for his for starting the Reading way effectively, and for the journey that takes him up to this point. He's very
and bring Marcus in, to be honest.
He was
sort of like left out in the cold at Fulham, and it looked like he wasn't going to get anywhere, and then suddenly Alan Pardew's like, or it seems like Brian McDermott at one point sees him warming up Mike Taylor and is like, we've got to get this guy, which is such a weird, like, serendipitous thing. But Pardew takes...
And he was just the guy throwing the ball at...
Yeah! what was that going to tell you? But they take him, and he's really good. So it is quite... He has a lot of love for Pardew. But it sort of feels like they play Alan Pardew about five times in the season. Because he manages...
Well, he goes to Charlton. He's at West Ham, then he goes
he
to Charlton.
He starts at West Ham, then he goes to Charlton. I really liked how at West Ham it was sort of like, oh yeah, it's nice to see Alan Pardew again. And then by Charlton, clearly things have gone incredibly wrong for Alan Pardew. And he's like, Marcus is talking about how Alan Pardew is shouting from the touchline like things about the Reading players to try and distract them.
Oh yeah. Like, well, you take a shot off Ibrahima.
Yeah. Gonna go fishing later, huh, Shane Long? Huh? How's your golf game, Graham Stack? I know you cheat your mother.
But it is interesting how Pardew is kind of... All these players love him, which I found an interesting thing from this book. I've always kind of thought of Pardew in a little bit of a jokey way. But
I think actually, especially back in 2006 or whenever this was, he was a bit of a golden boy, you know.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, before he went to West Ham, it didn't quite go to plan. But
And then he sort of, you know, and then at Newcastle, he kind of, you know, got his career back on track as well.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, I don't know, I think Pardew doesn't get enough credit a lot of the time. He's definitely not just a later Peter Reid, which I know is what we're implying he is here.
Latter-day
Peter Reid.
Another guy who gets dissed a lot in books, I've noticed, Adi Akinbaye. Very strange. Yeah. Because Hanneman describes him as one of the most aggressive strikers there is. Adi Akinbaye is a player who I kind of totally forgot about. But every book seems... He comes up a lot in books.
He came up in Perry Groves' book.
He did. Like, he must have been so young in Perry Groves' book.
He was, and it was so weird because Perry Groves was like, this is my final game. And Adi Akinbaye came up to him and was a bit of a dick to him. It's like Adi Akinbaye is like a thread throughout all of our books, connecting them together. Like everyone's nemesis.
Guys, should we do a little pitch around this week?
Oh, yes, please. The pictures are incredible.
Amazing.
And
some of the best pictures we've ever had. And loads of them.
It's not even like a section. It's just constant.
Throughout the whole book.
And they've clearly all been taken on disposable cameras.
Yes.
Yes.
It's very poorly lit.
It's very hipster. Oh, they're very great. It's good Instagram pictures.
Yeah, most of them are. Apart from one, right in the middle of the book. Bobby Convey, who is a Reading left winger, standing around holding a ready-made mac and cheese.
Oh, yes.
It's the least glamorous Premier League football I've ever seen in my life.
I adore it. I absolutely... It's such a nice
with his
picture.
Tiny, like, fringe and stuff like that.
I like how he specifies that they gave him that as a joke. It wasn't his actual Christmas present.
It's very cute.
That was his favourite present that year, though, anyway.
Oh, definitely.
But then there's a lot of pictures, obviously, with Marcus's incredible facial hair throughout the book. He's got a handlebar mustache at one point.
Yeah, cool. It looks great. It's one of the first pictures. I was like, okay, this is... He looks like a German strongman. It's great.
No, he looks like Bronson. The guy
he does look like Bronson.
There's also a picture right at the beginning, which is subtitled "Those Crazy Royals," and I don't know if he's being sarcastic because it's just about 15 Reading fans just sitting very still.
They look so bored. Not cheering a goal. They look.
There's
like
some empty seats.
The sun's in their eyes. They don't look happy. It's really funny. I mean, there are just so many. There's also a bit where Marcus is just in shadow. Like looking quite down, and it says a goalkeeper's life can be a lonely one. but it's on a page where he's talking about how much he loves his kids. Very odd. It's just like where should we put the depressed goalkeeper one? With the kids.
they really don't like match up. There's one with Sylvester Stallone because Sylvester Stallone comes out in an Everton game. They just have a picture of Sylvester Stallone really early. It's like, what's happening there?
Then you tell them a little bit later. Like 6 pages later, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's Sylvester Stallone. Cool, I understand now.
Makes sense. But Jack, your favourite picture was the very last one, which is the weirdest choice of a final picture.
It's such a good... So the book has had like lots of good pictures. You know, just before the last picture, in fact, there's a really nice picture of him with his kids, which definitely would have been the way to end it.
Like, yeah, and loads of pictures of him with his kids. In matches as well. Like, really,
yeah, in
like,
matches or like,
great
and, like with
matches.
His family or like celebrating. Or the final picture is entitled "Friends from Colorado Enjoying Benefits from Our Beloved Vitamixer." From left to right, Kevin Fix, Lauren Donaldson, myself, and Frank Collenstein. None of those other people have been mentioned in the book.
Frankly, Lauren Donaldson looks raging at whatever has come out of that Vitamixer.
What the hell have you given me?
And then that's the end of the book!
Does anyone know what a Vitamixer is?
No.
The book ends. This year had a real impact on him, it seems like. He fulfills his dreams in the premierships. He makes his dad proud, which is really nice. Yeah. And he decides maybe he'd like to be a coach in the future, which, as you said, Tash, he did.
He is fulfilling his dream.
Guys, did this book change you? It's a hard one to be changed by, I guess.
It is.
But I think you all enjoyed it, right?
I really enjoyed it. And I think it actually did change me in the sense that I felt very, like, it calmed me down a lot. And made me feel like I was genuinely excited to read more of it.
Do you know what? It made me miss the tube, because this would have been a great book to read on the tube, because I reckon you could get like an entry in per station.
That's very true. I completely agree with that. And I would have been annoyed at like a really long entry if I had a really short station.
Exactly.
If I was going between like Oxford Circus and Bond Street. And I had suddenly like a 2-page entry. I'd be like, oh, come on.
I don't need to read about Remus Unko's body in that much detail.
Yeah. speed through. It's very bullet sized. I mean, I feel like it's almost like ASMR for your eyes.
Yeah.
It's very
I know what you mean.
Calming and very like, here's what I did. There's little, it's definitely not passionate.
No.
And I think in that sense, I think it probably did change me because I felt very relaxed by it.
Well, that's good. What would you give it out of 10 then for the leaderboard?
I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay,
I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Oh, whoa. My gosh.
We've never had decimals before. I love it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're allowed this. Let me think. I have to do the math at the end of my brain. So
okay, fine. It's closer to a 7 than an 8.
7.5 is fine. We've got to be honest. You said 7.5, so now I just need to test myself. I am also going to give it... it's not a book, it's not a diary, but weirdly I liked it. It's 7 as well.
Yeah.
And like, to beat it, so far Sean Gota's got an average of 7, Amoruso's got 6.67, Kevin Fitz has got 6, Marcus Hanneman has just beaten it. Marcus Hanneman is the winner of Behind Closed Doors.
Wow. Remarkable. I mean,
and I think anyone reading this book will struggle to understand why that's the case.
I think reading it in the context of the current global climate gives it, you know, its a very own sort of calming space.
Perhaps
if the world was normal, he wouldn't have got such a high rating.
That's fair.
I think as a book, Sean Goat is the clear winner.
Yes,
but
100%.
As an
experience,
you know, as something else. Yeah.
As an experience, right now, I think Marcus is my go to. I would, if I had to reread these books again, I will probably keep this by my bedside as just a thing whenever I get stressed out, to be like, ah, okay, cool.
Yeah. If I wake up at 4 a.m., this is the one I'm reading.
Okay,
he's
that's
upset
good.
that David.
So I only choose Jermaine Pennant's mental.
Yeah.
This week's quiz, you're named after the two most important people in his life. Jack, you're Ray Northway of Northway Porsche.
Love it.
And Tash, you're Dave, the manager of Costco.
Yes!
You got to shout your name before answering. So you got to shout Ray Northway of Northway Porsche or Dave, the manager of Costco.
Okay.
Question one, where did Marcus have his first trial with a British club?
Where?
What club?
Ray Northway from Northway Porsche.
Yes.
Aston Villa?
No.
Okay. God, where is it?
Dave, the manager of Costco?
Burnley?
The answer is Sheffield Wednesday.
Yes.
Is it?
Or Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah.
Question number two. What does Sam Sodger shout at the top of his voice as he heads the ball?
Ray Northway from Northway Porsche.
Yes, Ray.
Hi-yah!
Yes, is the correct answer. He writes it like H-I dot dot dot, yeah. I wasn't sure if he was doing it like a karate or kind of going, hi-yah.
Hi-yah.
I don't think it's hi-yah. Hi-yah!
Hi, you love. let me just get that ball, please. What football team does the guy who played Boba Fett support?
Ray Northway from Northway Porsche.
Yes. I know this one.
Tottenham Hotspur.
Of course.
And amazingly, he gives him the greatest non sequitur dedication, which is to the Hanneman family, because he signs an autograph.
Oh,
for him,
yes,
to,
I
to
love
the Hanneman
this
family name. From the best centre forward in the galaxy. The guy who plays Boba Fett is not the best centre forward in the galaxy. What's happening?
Well, we don't know that, and I'm backing him because he's a Spurs fan. Finally, Tool have had one UK top 100 hit, reaching number 81 in the UK singles chart in 1993. Was the song called A, Stink Fist, B, Prison Sex, or C, Come On Feed the Goat?
Prison Sex.
What's your name?
Dave from Costco.
Dave from Costco, what's your answer?
Prison Sex.
Is the correct answer.
Yes!
But sadly, Dave, you couldn't quite claw it back. Ray Northway of Northway Porsche is this week's winner of the quiz.
Northway! Thank you. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks a lot, guys. Come on. Thanks for being part of this series. You know, it's been tough reading it behind closed doors, but we've enjoyed it. That's some good books to get us through.
It's been fun.
Yeah, really fun. If anyone has any thoughts on the books, if you've read this one or you want to read along to any more in the future, message us reviews, follow us at Footy Book Club on Twitter, Football Book Club on Instagram, review the podcast, subscribe, follow us. Any last words, guys?
Hiya!
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt and Natasha Daniels. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Marcus Hanneman for writing the book. But what are they all up to now? Well, Marcus went on to play for Wolves, Everton and the Seattle Sounders before retiring in 2014. He also genuinely collaborated on the 2012 track Amiga with Reading metal band Malefice. Sadly, he's yet to be asked on tour with Tool. Amanda to this day has raised billions of pounds for charity simply from getting Ibrahim Sonko to take his shirt off. Steve Coppell still occasionally stops and chuckles for hours on end at the thought of Stephen Hunt miskicking a ball. Leroy Leiter to this day hasn't attended a Tool concert. Terrible. And Northway Porsche is still going as strong as ever. The music Lobby Time is the property of Kevin MacLeod at filmmusic.io and is used under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back soon with more episodes. Thanks for listening to the Behind Closed Doors specials. All hail Lucasaid. Stay safe. Bye-bye.